I'm Bruce Barber, and this is Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center and an internationally known expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Miller is a medical oncologist and the director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Clinic. Ken specializes in pain and palliative care. If you'd like to submit a question about cancer, please email us at canceranswers@yale.edu. Or you can make a phone call, 1-888-234-4YCC. If you're interested in listening to past editions of Yale Cancer Center Answers, each segment is posted on the Yale Cancer Center website at yalecancercenter.org. This evening, Ed and Ken discuss exercise and cancer prevention with Dr. Melinda Irwin, Assistant Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health at the Yale School of Medicine and a member of the Yale Cancer Center.
All right, well, let's dig right in. There's a lot of interest in how exercise is important for good health, but how does exercise and physical fitness relate to cancer in terms of either causing or reducing the risk of cancer?
Okay, there's been numerous studies, over 50 to 100 observational studies showing a benefit of physical activity in reducing risk for certain cancers, specifically breast and colon cancer. The evidence is strongest for those two cancers. And the amount of physical activity necessary is only about 2 to 3 hours per week of a moderate intensity activity such as brisk walking. And that amount of physical activity is associated with about a 30 to 40% reduced risk of developing breast or colon cancer in men and women. Recently, there's been some exciting research showing a benefit of physical activity after being diagnosed with cancer, and that amount of physical activity improving your prognosis, so potentially reducing your risk of recurrence or a new cancer, or as well as increasing survival. So those who may not have been physically active before diagnosis and then unfortunately are diagnosed with, say, breast or colon cancer, and they begin an exercise program, there is evidence of reducing recurrence.
Melinda, just let's take a step back. What are the general recommendations for exercise for the general public? Mm-hmm. So not even a patient with cancer or cancer survivor, but, you know, an average individual here in the United States.
Yeah, great question. Currently, the recommendation is about 150 minutes per week of moderate intensity activity. So that 150 minutes could be looked at as 30 minutes, say 5 days per week, of something like brisk walking. That's really based on more cardiovascular disease prevention. Currently, there really is no recommended amount for cancer prevention, and that's where a lot of the research is right now. We're currently looking at how much exercise to prevent cancer, and we're recommending the 30 minutes 5 days per week.
Mm-hmm. Now, the exercise that someone does for cardiovascular health, I mean, would you expect that would have the same impact on cancer risk?
Perhaps, yes. Some of the mechanisms that lead to, say, a risk of cardiovascular disease may be similar for cancer, such as certain hormones like insulin levels. And then there's other hormones for cancer, estrogens. And so some research has shown that exercise may have to be a little bit more intense than, a moderate intensity activity to see a favorable change in those hormones. But some of the research has shown that's not the case, that brisk walking, a moderate intensity activity, is enough to see a benefit. So, that's where we're at. It's the same recommendation as cardiovascular disease right now.
Now, would you recommend that an individual who either, has been given a diagnosis of cancer or who was a cancer survivor go to, a gym and seek out a personal trainer to try to help to define exactly what type of exercise is beneficial?
Yeah, it really depends on where that person is in their treatment. If they've just been diagnosed with treatment and they're about to begin their adjuvant treatment, their chemotherapy or radiation, and they've never exercised before or in the past 6 months or a year, it may be a smart move to wait till they're done with their treatment to join a gym and maybe seek out a personal trainer. If they've completed their treatment or they're in treatment but they've exercised regularly in the past, then yes, they should maintain their exercise program during their treatment or after finishing treatment, initiate a program immediately.
I have to say, it is a fascinating topic. Let's get into the mechanism a little bit. I mean, so people are exercising, they feel good, but how does that in the body impact on cancer risk, as best you can tell?
Sure. Well, if we think of something like breast cancer in postmenopausal women, one of the strongest risk factors for breast cancer is estrogen. And in postmenopausal women, they stop producing estrogen via their ovaries, but they continue to produce estrogen in their fat tissue. So one mechanism may be that exercise is associated with weight maintenance or weight loss, you know, fat loss, and that losing body fat, losing weight, is associated with a decrease in estrogen concentrations, which may therefore decrease the risk of getting breast cancer or decrease the risk of a recurrence. So that's one mechanism. And then there's others such as insulin, insulin-like growth factors, immune functioning, that where exercise may change these, what we call them, surrogate markers or biological markers related to cancer. And we know that these markers are strongly related to cancer. So if exercise changes those factors, then it may also improve prognosis.
Can you say a little bit? You had mentioned insulin before. Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so there's been many studies showing in healthy men and women that exercise acutely and chronically decreases insulin levels. So just doing a bout of exercise immediately after exercising, insulin levels are lowered. But also if they exercise regularly, that 5 times per week, over time, over 3 months, over 6 months, their insulin levels will decrease and stay at this lower level. And insulin is a mitogenic factor, a growth factor that increases cell proliferation in the breast or in the colon. And so if exercise can decrease insulin levels, it'll decrease the cell growth in the breast or colon tissue.
It's interesting because I think there are now a number of studies showing that certainly for breast cancer and for colorectal cancer, there are increased levels of maybe not insulin, but insulin-like growth factors, which do tend, as you say, to stimulate the growth of the tumors.
Yeah, and one of our recent studies that we just completed was a 6-month exercise program in postmenopausal breast cancer survivors who were about 2 to 3 years out of their diagnosis date. And we had these women exercise 30 minutes, 5 days per week. Most of them did brisk walking on a treadmill or in their neighborhood. And we found after 6 months strong, clinically significant decreases in insulin-like growth factor 1 and insulin levels, which hopefully will relate to an improvement in their prognosis.
Now, one of the interesting things in breast cancer is we're hearing about estrogen and weight loss and insulin growth factor, and one would have predicted you'd have more impact of diet and exercise on the women with positive estrogen receptor, but did that turn out to be the case?
Well, in some of our studies, our observational studies, when we look at the association of activity on, say, prognosis, some studies have observed an effect only among those who are hormone responsive positive or ER positive. And some studies have not shown the case. It's only an ER negative, which is sort of exciting because women who are ER negative, certain hormonal therapies aren't available for them. So something like exercise or diet is a great thing for them to do to improve their prognosis. So currently we don't know if it's only ER negative or ER positive, but perhaps for both ER positive and negative.
And Melinda, what's known about the kind of emotional, psychological benefits of exercise?
Great question. That's really where the first studies were done, looking at the role of exercise after cancer diagnosis. Most of the studies have looked at how exercise may improve fatigue, nausea, depression, overall quality of life during treatment and after treatment. They showed a strong relationship among those who exercised not being as tired nor depressed or having other negative quality of life outcomes. So that is very consistent evidence showing a favorable effect of exercise on quality of life.
I received an email from a young woman named Amy who lives in Southington, and she talks about that she's had breast cancer, and she said, "I've never been a person who exercises. My doctors tell me it's important." And she basically is saying this, where do I start?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, first, get a good pair of walking shoes, and a lot of people say, "Oh, I'm just too tired, I can't exercise." So what I usually tell my participants or clients is, just put those sneakers on and take a walk to the mailbox. And once you start that walk, maybe that 1 minute, say, okay, I'm going to walk 5 minutes down the street. And then before you know it, maybe that 5 minutes turns into 10 minutes, into 20 minutes, and then 30 minutes, and there you have it. You've doing the recommended amount. If you feel that you really need more of the social support, find a friend who may exercise and schedule a time to meet with him or her and go for a walk. Or hopefully a family member is also interested in starting an exercise program. You can also hopefully get, with the little bit more work, may work with a personal trainer. And having that commitment to schedule time will make sure that you really participate in the exercise program.
Melinda, are there any other activities other than the brisk walking that you've talked about that you can recommend for our listeners out there?
Yes, yes. I say brisk walking because that's something that anyone can do at a low cost, and so it doesn't require a lot of effort. But yes, any kind of aerobic activity that gets your heart rate up to about 40 to 60% of your maximal heart rate, which is 220 minus your age, so about 50% of that. So it may be bicycling or, you know, any of the exercise equipment at health clubs, swimming, some tennis if it's continuous activity. You want it to be continuous, not really a stop and go. There's some evidence of strength training being associated with improved prognosis, but most of the research is focused on aerobic exercise right now.
So is there any activity that you wouldn't recommend to a patient, say, either who's receiving chemotherapy treatments or who's just finished their treatment?
Yeah, I say swimming hesitantly because if some individual's receiving radiation therapy, you know, swimming may not be something they want to do at that time while they're undergoing radiation.
And why is that?
Because some of the exposure of the radiation in the swimming, the chlorine in the pool may cause some more burning or wherever they're having the radiation. Also, if they have any kind of ports or catheters, that may affect. You just want to avoid kind of any infections. Some used to think that it wasn't healthy to go to a health club and be around, you know, other individuals in an environment where, you know, everyone's kind of hot and maybe sweating. But there's been evidence showing that that doesn't really affect their rates of infection.
For patients who are complaining of a lot of fatigue after chemotherapy is finished, any recommendations for them?
Yeah, you know, really focus on the activities of daily living. So the grocery shopping, the laundry. And so think about how just, you know, don't set your goals too high. Like all of a sudden I have to do, you know, the 30 minutes today, but maybe the 5 minute bouts, you know, one day, 5 minute bouts. The next day, try and do 2 5 minute bouts and then the 3 5 minute bouts and maybe extend the 5 minutes to 8 or 10 minutes. So start slowly. Don't set your expectations too high, but really keep a log, you know, keep a journal with monthly goals perhaps of what you want to achieve.
Very good. Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to yalecanceranswers@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute, and then please stay tuned to learn more information about exercise and cancer prevention with Dr. Melinda Irwin from the Yale Cancer Center.
This year, over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are related to smoking, and quitting even after decades of use can significantly reduce your risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving thanks to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, a federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test new treatments for lung cancer. And patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute. For more information, go to yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and Dr. Melinda Irwin, who's from the Yale Cancer Center, discussing the impact of physical fitness on cancer and on cancer survivors. Melinda, you've done some fascinating research on exercise and cancer survivors. Can you tell us what you have been working on, and then we'll get a little bit to what you are working on now.
Sure, yeah. Well, most of the research that's been done is observational research. So it, basically what I mean is they're not trials. So studies have looked at whether women who reported physical activity levels, say, 10 years ago and they were followed and some unfortunately developed a breast cancer, and those who had higher levels of activity had a lower risk. So from that, we now really want to know, well, what are the mechanisms? What caused, you know, those who were active, how did it prevent their cancer from developing? And so most of my research has been that we've done clinical trials, randomized clinical trials, where we randomize women with breast cancer who haven't regularly participated in exercise, and we put them into a 6-month or a year-long exercise program or usual care program, And at baseline and follow-up at 3, 6, 9, 12 months, we take blood draws and we look at how if exercise favorably changes certain hormones, the estrogens, the insulin-like growth factors, the cytokines, body fat levels. And we've been able to show that exercise does favorably change some of these surrogate markers, these biological markers. So that's getting at what are the mechanisms. The next study or trial that really needs to be done is to look at if exercise can, in fact, decrease recurrence and increase survival. So a randomized trial following women newly diagnosed with breast cancer for, say, 5 years, randomized to exercise or usual care, and to see that if those participating in exercise actually have a less risk of recurrence or a higher survival rate. So that's where we're at. And those findings will really extend the literature into giving what recommended amounts of physical activity are necessary for improving prognosis. Currently, it's just based on observational research. And the flaw with observational research is it exercise or is it some other behavior such as diet or weight loss or the fact that those who exercise may not be smoking as much or drinking less? So we really need to do a trial to isolate it to being exercise that favorably influences these outcomes.
Emmalyn, this is a trial looking at women with breast cancer after treatment, and so those women who've are cancer survivors or actually taking from the time of diagnosis, including treatments?
A little bit of it all. Prior to this, I've done a lot of research in those who are at high risk for say, breast cancer, but, you know, healthy individuals. My current research is those with a breast cancer diagnosis. I had one study that was during treatment and another that was post-treatment, so women were about 1 to 5 years post-diagnosis. Those were all the trials looking at what are the mechanisms. The trial to actually look at a recurrence and survival takes individuals once they finish their treatment, so usually, you know, within about 9 to 18 months after their diagnosis, and they're in the trial for about 5 years to look at their risk of recurrence and survival.
Now, with that group, what will be the expectation about what exercise they'll be doing?
Yep, based on the current recommendation that we have right now. So we want at least the 30 minutes 5 days per week, but we're going to actually recommend that they do 45 minutes, knowing that not everyone always adheres to the 30 minutes. So if we give them the goal of 45 minutes, then hopefully most will do at least the 30 minutes and maintaining that moderate intensity aerobic type of physical activity. I also have some new research looking at some of the side effects of the hormonal therapies. A lot of women, postmenopausal women with ER-positive breast cancer, are put on certain aromatase inhibitors that have negative side effects, joint pain or hot flashes. And I'm interested in looking at if exercise favorably can decrease some of those side effects, because unfortunately these side effects are causing some of the women to stop taking their hormonal therapy. So if exercise can decrease those side effects, hopefully they'll stay on those hormone therapies, which are known to strongly improve their prognosis.
And as you mentioned also, Melinda, obviously nutrition plays a key role. How do you factor in, how do you control for, you know, the diet for each of these patients?
Yeah, it's tough because we're kind of interested in looking at physical activity as an independent effect. But we also recognize that there's a lot of studies currently going on that look at that show a favorable effect of diet. So what we tell our participants is if they want to change their diet, they can, but we're not providing them nutrition counseling. However, we do give them every 4 months, they have a newsletter with some diet information, diet tips to follow the National Cancer Institute dietary guidelines. And then when they're finished with the study, any information that is important for them to know about other lifestyle behaviors, we provide to them. So at baseline and at the follow-up assessments, we do measure their diet so that we can control for any changes that may have occurred in their diet. But since we're not intervening on diet, a lot of these women won't change their diet. So we will be able to look at really the role of exercise independent of any other behavioral changes.
And how frequently will you be following and monitoring these patients while on the trial?
Right. So they have their baseline visit, and then usually every 3 months, we have either a phone call or a mailing questionnaire to them that they have to complete. And then every year they come for a clinic visit. So they usually have contact with us. If they're in the usual care program, they have contact with us every 3 months. And if they're in the exercise program, they have weekly and then monthly contact, depending on where they are in the study.
And then presumably they must have a diary to map out their activities.
Yep, they keep an exercise log every week of the activities that they've done, and they wear heart rate monitors, so we know that the intensity of exercise that they're exercising at. They wear pedometers for a week, a given week every month. So all of this can give us more information about, objective information about their physical activity levels. They also have at baseline and annually they'll do a treadmill test to look at how fit they are and if their fitness levels have changed with the exercise program.
It makes me wonder, for patients who are not in a study like yours, where there's a lot of reward and recognition, and I think your group is a wonderful cheerleaders. What would you recommend that we oncologists do to try to help other people?
Yeah, well, currently I'm working with the American Cancer Society, American College of Sports Medicine, and we're developing a certification program for personal trainers to be certified in working with those individuals diagnosed with cancer, either during treatment or post-treatment. And so it'll be, you know, a nice referral system that oncologists may know of these individuals who are certified in their state or in their county, and they can connect them with their patients. This will be rolling out in the end of 2007, this certification program and referral process. So it'll be a great way. And currently there's something similar like this with finding a nutritionist to work with their, you know, individuals diagnosed with cancer. So to learn more about it, they can either contact me or the American Cancer Society later this year.
And Melinda, if anyone out there who's listening is interested in participating in any of your trials, how can they get in touch with you? How can they access the information?
Yeah, please get in touch with me. Probably the easiest way is to email me. If you have access to email, melinda.irwin@yale.edu, or they can access this website at the Yale Cancer Center and connect to my email or homepage as well.
I want to ask you about one of your newer projects, which we're very excited about, which is looking at exercise in the as it relates to a cancer survivorship program.
Yeah. You know, so a lot of the research I've been talking about is very detailed and structured and supervised. So another question that we're really interested in is currently at the Yale Cancer Center, we have a survivorship program for individuals diagnosed with cancer. Once they finish their treatment, they come to a one-day, couple hours a counseling session with a nutritionist and a physical therapist, a social worker. And we're interested in looking at if just coming to this survivorship program on this one afternoon is associated with improvements in certain behaviors, not just physical activity, but also diet and favorable changes in their quality of life. And if so, if we show a favorable effect of this one afternoon survivorship program, then hopefully more cancer centers or hospitals around the country will have cancer rehabilitation programs or cancer survivorship programs available for their individuals diagnosed with cancer.
So that's going to be an interesting set of outcomes. I mean, I guess our hope is that it will show an improvement, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, and if we don't show an improvement, it could be that that one-day survivorship program wasn't enough. Perhaps they need follow-up with the physical therapist or the nutritionist, either via email or a phone call once a month for the first 6 months, and that's associated with improvements in these behaviors. But, you know, I'm hopeful that, you know, for similar to cardiac rehabilitation programs back in the 80s, those programs were associated with strong improvements in behaviors that improved, you know, these individuals' cardiac risk. And so hopefully we'll see similar findings with cancer risk and prognosis.
You know, it's not, just going back to an earlier point, I mean, it's not been a big emphasis in the medical world about having our patients exercise more and eat more. Do you see that changing at all?
I think so. I think it's motivated by people, by the individuals, as well as hopefully by the medical community. I think, you know, the medical community is motivated by research. So as long as the research is continuing to show favorable effects of lifestyle behaviors, exercise, diet, weight loss, weight maintenance on cancer prevention and prognosis, then they'll want to emphasize it more to their patients.
Melinda, and as we're finishing up tonight's show, any last-minute words of advice to our listeners out there?
No, I would just like to say that to remember that something is better than nothing. So to not overwhelm yourself and set your goal too high, but, you know, start with 5 minutes a day. Maybe make that 5 minutes two times a day and then keep it going, and to find a buddy to exercise with.
So, Melinda, I want to thank you very much for joining us. This is a great topic, and I really want to thank you also for your wonderful research that you're doing for all of us.
Thank you.
Melinda, it's been great having you on the show. We look forward to hearing more from you in the future. Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find past broadcasts in written form. Next week on Yale Cancer Center Answers, we examine breast cancer. I'm Bruce Barber.